And welcome to Coffee Corner Radio. My name is Martin Fischer, and today I have a very special guest, John Reed from Digenomica. The old guns in the SAP community know him for sure, and maybe also the younger ones. But maybe, John, you can give us a glimpse on who you are and what you are doing.
Cool. Well, I've been writing about the SAP community since 1995. It kind of began as an act of desperation and turned into inspiration over time. and it's been quite a ride. And, you know, my goal from the beginning was to see if I could, like, provide context for people to help better understand the situations they're facing, their products and their careers and stuff. And then over time, things kind of broadened. I was really active in the SAP community. I was a mentor for a long time. But eventually, like, my heart was always in being a journalist and then an analyst. And so when I co-founded Digenomica with my other co-conspirators around 11 years ago, I kind of moved a little bit away from, like, focusing a lot on SAP as my core thing. And it became one of the vendors I track. But I generally don't. I'm different in that I try not to track vendors as much as a lot of my colleagues do. Outside of Digenomica, I try to track issues because issues are what I care about. I care about things like transformation. I care about what customers struggle with on projects, how to get those hard-won successes. You know, how do you get good workplaces and not surveillance workplaces? Like, I want to talk about issues and then in the context vendors. That's kind of what I try to do in my work, but ultimately, I'm a blogger and media producer to try to share that content. But then on the analyst side, I become more and more interested in the analyst side of this business because I think the analyst side of this business needs to change and evolve a lot. And, you know, media has been heavily disrupted for a lot of different reasons we could talk about. Analyst industry, not as much. And I think it needs more and more, quote unquote, disruption in a good way. And I'm prepared to talk about with you today if you want. So.
Yeah, what a great segue to the actual topic of today's episode. So we want to talk about the industry analysts to some extent. For me, also always a bit of a whatever miracle. Okay, I all know them, of course, for sure. The very big ones, of course. First of all, so Forrester and Gartner, IDC, for example, but also Digenomica to some extent. And I also recognize that you are different than the others, and of course also Constellation Research. Shout out to Holger, a very common and frequent guest on my show here. From an outside perspective, when I was in consulting, two years back, it was always a bit like, okay, Gartner said something. Now all vendors are doing what Gartner or any other of the big analyst companies kind of forecast or have on their hot topic list, and all the customers are looking into it as well. So it's to some extent a self-fulfilling prophecy. And the magic thing with all that is that the big analyst companies are talking to the vendors and make them charge for pay for it. And they talk to the clients, to the end or the companies, end users is the wrong word in business to business context, of course, and also make them charge pay for it. That's the best business model you can have, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And that's one of the things that desperately needs to change in our industry. And I want to make it clear from the outset that I have friends that work for some of these larger entities you referred to, and there's some very smart, capable people in those firms. So that's not about that. But what it is about, I think, is that there's a lot of murkiness in our industry around, like, things like disclosure and what we might call pay-per-play, like who is getting funded for what. A lot of times with some of these things, like whether it's quadrants or waves or trapezoids or whatever you want to call them, to get placed on those a lot of times it's unclear whether you need to be a client or not. And that makes me personally very uncomfortable. I kind of want to take a shower after I hear the anecdotes about that. Diginomica, we're not in a position to change all of that ourselves. But one thing we do, we're more of a media outlet. And we could talk a little bit about the differences between analysts and media. But we try to publish with a lot of analyst sensibilities. But one thing is we disclose on all of our blogs who our clients are. And I see very, very little disclosure happening, especially with these large analyst firms around who are your clients, who are your not your clients. And I think readers, customers have a right to know that. I really like that Redmonk does that also in their blogs. And then I can't name you a third in our entire industry. So I don't think that's a real endorsement of transparency, in my opinion, and there needs to be a lot more of that. But the other thing I would like to say is that I think we really need to reorient what this industry is for. Because to me, and this is a very outspoken thing, but I think we're not delivering enough successful projects in our industry, and we haven't ever. And I think all of our collective obligation, whether it's analyst, what you do, what any of us do, should ultimately be about serving the customer to make their projects better. That's our job, and that's how we should be evaluated. And if we're not doing that, and we're not helping customers make their projects better and increasing all the dialogue around that that helps them, then we need to start rethinking what we're doing. And that's the conversation that I start with, because then I try to figure out a business model that can help support all of that and be good for me also.
Yeah, that sounds very reasonable, and I agree. This full disclosure thing is I think something which would be really appreciated. But maybe let's also go one step back already. So maybe some of our listeners are not too deep into that whole industry and how it works. So actually, what are the offerings of analysts, and why and when should I consult them as a customer, I would say, or not as a software vendor, so the other side?
That's a really good question. And, you know, I look at it, I've written a lot about this. I wrote a D-book about the informed B2B buyer, but in general, I think that now we're in a phase of perpetual motion. It used to be more about like discrete projects. Oh, you go buy software and you implement it. I think now, and this is, I think, good for our industry, it's kind of a constant evolution. And part of this is because of SaaS and software as a service. But there's this feeling that we're always trying to be more successful, and we always have a project going on, and we're always trying to get better. And in the context of that, we want all the different external information sources and dialogue and resources that we can get. And some of those are our peers, and that's very important. Some of that's inside of our company. Some of that is content, and that content could be generated by analysts or media. And some of it is stuff you would get in your social streams. And all of that, I think, connects to networks that you're trying to build around yourself. I think the most successful people in our industry have really good, what I would call, networks of trusted people, trusted advisors, people that they can turn to. You know, I know you do this. You know, we've done this back and forth, you and me. Like, what do you make of what SAP just did? And we'll have this fierce back and forth about that. It makes us both smarter. And I think the people that really want to be successful are doing that all the time. Analyst relationships are kind of a way of formalizing that. And, you know, the firms like Gartner, they have, you know, they have a vendor ranking thing typically. So a lot of analyst firms will have some form of that. In Gartner's form is kind of like this quadrant thing. I tend to think the quadrants, you know, in that kind of format of ranking by product is kind of a legacy concept. I'm sorry, but I think it is, because I think more and more we should think about processes and end-to-end processes, not discrete product categories, but that's a different conversation. But anyway, so you have the vendor ranking thing, and then you have research projects, and some of those are like annual things. Like one thing I really like that Gartner does is the annual hype cycle, for example. So there's certain annual things like that. And then there's research, and some of the research industry can be very suspect, in my opinion, because it can be very difficult to figure out. Like, vendors often pay for research from certain firms that seem like they validate the vendor's conclusions, which is a very murky territory for me. It's like, oh wow, like DevOps is a pain point, and it was sponsored by a DevOps firm. And it's like, you know, so a lot of times the research part, you need to figure out, like, was this really independent research, or was it funded research? There's nothing wrong with funded research either, as long as you're clear about that, but it's just important. So there's a research point, and then there's an advisory aspect. And, you know, what I'm personally interested in doing, like Diginomica, for example, we don't do quantified research and we don't do vendor rankings, and we're never going to do vendor rankings. But one thing that I've been working on is this concept of next gen analyst relations. And I'll explain why I use that like ridiculous buzzword in a sec. But what I'm working on is really this notion of how we can be more dynamic in our relationships, because it used to be like, oh, you would do a big briefing session once a year and the analyst would come in and tell you all the things you're doing right and wrong. Or they would formally prepare a report on your product that took like 6 or 9 months to build. And sometimes those things are still useful, but my contention is that the industry is moving too fast right now. Technology is moving too fast. AI, for example, is a perfect example of that. I feel like we need to come up with much more dynamic and fluid ways for so-called analysts to be of service to vendors and customers. And the same with vendors to customers. We have to change the pace of things. And that's one reason why I think the analyst relations industry needs to change a lot.
Yeah. I'm with you in regards to the speed that right now it's really becoming almost an issue, because everything is kind of outdated the day after you created it. Yep. Also, from the vendor's perspective, that's hard to follow if you are responsible rather for the content than the development side, to be honest. Yeah. So just to conclude what you just said about what they are doing, they are preparing research, they do that vendor rankings, which is, I think it's never just a ranking. There are always some dimensions, however they call right. it. Then they do kind of advisory gigs, which I would, with my consulting background, call just kind of consulting engagement for advisory. If a customer wants to buy or implement a certain process, if I take your perspective, then they need in the end nowadays usually some software to support it. So that's their offering towards the buyer side. And as I said in the beginning, there's also there are some offerings for the vendors which they pay for. I can imagine there are conferences, of course, where they some of the vendors are sponsors, and also the booth, I think. Yep. Is something where they pay for. But what are the other things?
Right.
For the vendors.
Right. And so some of the largest analyst firms do hold specialized events and conferences like you referred to. I think that can be healthy to sort of build relationships around what they're doing, which I think is important. One thing we didn't quite touch on is that, and I've been corresponding with a couple people about this right now, is to try to sort of look at what is or is not the value of analysts to different phases in what you might call a customer journey or a product life cycle or whatever, where you look at, there's all kinds of ways of describing the phases. It could be everything from awareness, evaluation, consideration, decision, implementation, post-implementation, all this type of stuff. And generally speaking, analysts are available for all of those phases in a project's life cycle. The one thing analysts typically don't do is hands-on implementation work, but they might be involved, for example, in shortlisting vendors for that. There are analysts that provide auditing functions during ongoing projects, which is something that I personally think is very, very important and often overlooked. But essentially, I like to think of it like pretty much everything except for hands-on implementation an analyst could be involved with. And like, even in the case of a hands-on implementation, like if I'm talking with a customer, I will often encourage them to engage with third-party vendors with specialized solutions during the project, or also an independent expert who's like a hands-on person. One example is I would sometimes recommend, you know, independent SAP consultants for SAP projects, for example, where I thought they had more configuration skills and more deep know-how than the prime vendor. And so essentially analysts get involved with all that stuff, except generally for the hands-on implementation. So that's another way of kind of thinking about how they can fit in. The answer is they can fit into almost all of it. And it's kind of wherever you need wherever you have pain points, need some adult supervision or some independent perspective on what's going on, or where you just need more industry context. Like one of the big things for analysts is like trying to make sense of like, is this technology for real? Is it just hype? What, and you know, what are my competitors doing? How, what are they, where are they succeeding? What are the pitfalls? You know, those are, to me, those are the kinds of things that you would turn to analysts for.
No, okay. Yeah, that makes indeed a lot of sense, I think. So there, the research analysts do, is that kind of, does this include that they touch hands-on the systems of the vendors, or is it more kind of reviewing the content on the website, handing out questionnaires, doing interviews, or talking even to customers? Don't know to which extent that is part of that kind of research.
Yeah, every analyst and analyst firm has a little bit of their own methodology and their own approach. There's not too many that actually insist on operating the software themselves, but many analysts would want to take close look at demos. And for example, when vendors have us in for so-called analyst days and stuff, there's usually some significant time devoted to product demos and, you know, walking through roadmaps, but in an illustrative way that show how the UX is, user experience is changing and stuff like that. So there needs to be some facility with that. Some analysts are much more interested in customer deep dives than others. I find it fascinating because like some are more really just want to drill very, very deep into a product roadmap and really understand the specifics of that. And I get that, but I am always looking for customer validation, and I'm always pushing vendors, for example, to put more customers in front of me, to mingle customers more with analysts. I've written a lot about that in my various blog posts on, you know, better analyst events and stuff like that. Because to me, it's all about customer validation in the end. Like, and I really can't speak about any vendor with confidence until I've vetted things with customers. And this comes up a lot, especially with generative AI. I had a situation with a vendor where I said, like, the vendor claimed no hallucinations. I said, I want to talk to your customer, and you can't be on the call, like, because I need to be able to ask them honestly, like, are there any hallucinations? Why or why not? I want that honest answer. And I said, and the vendor was uncomfortable with it, but I said, in the end,
of course,
I said, in the end, this is going to help both of us, because if you're confident in your product and what it does, this will be reflected, and it will look better for you that you weren't there hanging over my shoulder, because that's going to have a, you know, and to be fair, a lot of times I will allow a vendor to sit in on a customer interview because the customer can sometimes like feel a little shy if their handler, quote unquote, isn't there, their relationship, their partner. But in the case of certain things like that, I need that gut check. But analysts are a little bit different in terms of how deep they're going to go with that. You know, in Diginomica, we often write about those discussions because customer case studies are core to what we publish. But it varies by analyst. They all have their own methodologies. And so that's one reason why I think when you engage with an analyst, it's really useful to ask them those questions and say, how do you arrive at your positions? You know, how do you do your research? You know, and everyone's going to have a slightly different answer depending on their firm. And there isn't one best way. It's, I think you ultimately judge people by the caliber of the content and advice they give you and the research and data they give you.
Yeah, that's indeed the case, for sure. So the big vendors, at least if I go to some of the major events of big software vendors, which is usually SAP for me, I also see there's always also a kind of a special conference parts for the analysts or for the analyst briefings and stuff like that. Is that normal case, or do all vendors do that, or is it something special I just experienced there?
That's a good question. I think it's a little bit mixed. I would say the majority do. It's tricky. The temptation to add an analyst component to a user conference is that you've already got your executives in the same place. The reason some vendors don't do it is because those executives are often very, very hectic, crazy those weeks, right? And if there's VIP customer meetings all week long, you can kind of understand why they might not want to spend an hour or two or three or four with analysts at that particular point in time when they could do it at a separate occasion. So some vendors would like to, and they will have like an analyst event, a little bit before or after their user conference. But most vendors these days are including some analyst component into the user conference, I think just because it's logistically easier to work it in there somehow. We don't need to talk with the CEO all day long. For example, if the CEO comes for like an hour of Q&A and then leaves, we're going to get the rest of what we need for other people. So it generally can work. I think what a lot of vendors will do is they will also have a separate located analyst relations event about half a year between the main user conferences. And that allows a good rhythm in terms of product updates, vendor updates, and a refocusing on that particular event, in kind of a rhythm. But every vendor's a little bit different about that, but that's very typical.
Okay. So with all what you explained already, is it fair to say that the at least the big analyst companies are steering the whole industry to some extent?
Well, they would like to, because that's historically the position that they've enjoyed. I think the sort of chokehold that the large analyst firms have had on the industry has diminished somewhat. And the reason for that is simple, which is that customers have a lot more ways of getting information than they used to. When I was first starting out and writing about SAP in 1995, I didn't know a whole lot at that time. And I was building this whole ERP like website and division. I talked my boss into subscribing to Forrester because they had these back in the day, in the mid 90s, they had the best SAP reports out there. And I couldn't wait to get that once a month. That report was like gold for me. And I eventually met the author of some of those reports, Bobby Cameron, which is really cool. In fact, I just realized I still have one of his reports that he can't find, so I got to give it to him. But anyway, so those paper reports were like a big deal back then, but now that seems like such an archaic concept. And you can go every day as a customer, you can go online, you can look at peer review websites for software, you can find all kinds of sources of information. A lot of analyst sites have some blogs. We have Diginomica, we have God knows how many thousands of pages of content that you can look through on different vendors. So there's all kinds of content and information out there. And so that takes a little bit of that dominance away from the top vendors. And personally, I think that's healthy. Now, those vendors will still have a place because of the amount of toil they put into those. Vendor rankings is a slightly simplistic way of phrasing it, right? It's a lot of times it's kind of like putting vendors in different areas based on the maturity of their products and certain perceived disciplines and stuff like that. And I think that's a useful reference point for customers at times, but like I always say, it's not the stone tablets either. And so it's only one reference point. It's not the definitive. And so I think that's changing. And so in the last like 10, 15 years, we've seen the rise of a lot of what you might call boutique analyst firms. And those boutique firms are often built by folks who originally were working for the larger firms, but wanted to build something, I don't know, maybe leaner and meaner, a little bit more specialized, a little bit that they could own and control, all kinds of reasons. And my only issue with the boutiques, and there's some fantastic boutique firms out there, is that a lot of them are I feel like duplicating the larger vendor model. And there's some good things about the larger vendor model, but the larger analyst firm model. But like I was saying, I think we need to kind of change the industry to be more dynamic and fluid. And I don't see as much evidence of that from these so-called boutique firms. But some of the things some of the boutique firms do is really cool in terms of some of them actually compile research and data points that are not like they have, I think, a lot of research integrity because they're not sponsored research. But you have to be really careful with that in this industry, because if you come out with stuff that makes vendors look bad, you can take some heat. And so it actually takes some courage in this industry to put out objective data on how vendors are performing and stuff like that, because you will probably hear from some of their legal representatives at times challenging your conclusions and things like that. So it's a little bit rough and tumble out there for some of these vendors that want to do things in the right way. But I really love that, because it's like, you know, these smaller firms, I'm rooting for some of them. And so I think the industry is becoming more diverse. The only downside to everything I've said is that while there are some independent analysts out there still, and there's some really, really good independent voices that have like solo shops or just one or two people, it's getting harder and harder to be an independent in this industry. And that's too bad. And that's just a sign of the times, which is the algorithmic noise economy favors, you know, people that have more of a collective voice and a collective platform. And that's unfortunate, because I think the independent voices are really important.
Yeah, yeah. I understand your point. Valid point, I think. Just coming back to the vendor listings for a second, or the ranking in the end. I think, my background is in development, so hands-on stuff. And always when I read or still read these the outlets which are published with the rankings in the end, I always experience, okay, to some extent they made something, or they put something into a schema which doesn't necessarily fit. Sometimes I think in English you say it's comparing oranges and apples in the end, because they try to make all the vendors fit in this big schema, and sometimes they are the level, the abstraction level they are describing stuff in their reports is far away from whatever the technical reality, or they are missing architectural points because they are talking about a certain platform which actually is three or four products, because they are mixing the capabilities of that certain products into one that they are in order to be able to compare it in the end. And that's also, I think, to some extent, for me at least, as a reader, misleading to some extent.
Yeah, I mean, just look at like the data space, right? Like streaming data, data lakes, data lake houses, you know, AI data platforms,
yeah,
you know,
right,
like cloud-based data warehouses versus on-prem. Like, how many ways can you slice and dice these fast-moving categories? And this is one of the problems that I have, because these kinds of things you're talking about generally take a year for firms to research and put out, and how much change has made, and then how accurately do they really fit, which is why I say treat them as a useful reference point, not, you know, a decision-making determinant. Because, so for example, think about it from a customer review perspective. Like, one thing I track is how software peer review sites, like I'll hear from the big ones like the Trust Radiuses and the G2s and stuff, and they'll keep telling me they're moving up market, but only a little bit, it seems to me, because the thing is that one size fits all software works a little better when it's an impulse decision and you're a small business and you need to, like, you know, what's the best CRM for my small business? And you look at a few and you buy whatever. But when you get to these large enterprise situations, it's like, well, I'm in this particular industry. In this region, I have this data privacy protocol. In this region, I have this particular issue with subsidiaries and integration there. You know, and I need, customer facing e-commerce in this region, but not in this region. And I'm like, how is a vendor product map going to be able to take all that into account, right? Like large enterprise B2B software decisions are very complex and very industry specific, and there's all kinds of international data regulations. And I'm sure that's the same thing you experience from the vendor side, serving those customers and looking at that material and saying, gosh, all of our customers are very individualized. So how does this even work? Like, even if we were put on certain like product maps, this wouldn't even accurately represent some of the things we can do. And oh, by the way, we just rolled out this other new awesome thing. And then you have to like contact the research firm and explain to them what your new awesome thing is and why that qualifies you. And then they're like, no, you're not qualified and blah, blah, blah. And to a certain extent, you just want to tear your hair out and say, this is a total ridiculous waste of time. And that's a little bit too strong, but I do think we need to have a little perspective on these things.
Yeah, of course. But I also see the challenge on the for the analyst companies. To some extent, they need to digest all the content they get from the vendors, and of course, every vendor tries to be the best. And of course, all the answers are very polished, probably, which they get. So they also, of course, to some extent, I think that's coming with experience to be also able to read between the lines, for sure. But I think it's hard to get to the reality.
I was just at an event with a forester analyst that I respect a lot, and that particular vendor was in evaluation mode, and I know this person. She takes those things very seriously in her product category, which happens to be enterprise software related stuff. And I don't want to say more because I want to respect the confidentiality, but she was taking it really, really seriously. And I respect that. And like you said, that's a hard job because vendors, like the way you described it is perfect. Like, what vendor is going to say, no, we don't do that? I mean, vendors pretty much will say, do you do that? It's like either they do it or, oh, it'll be out next quarter or it's on the roadmap or something.
It's on the roadmap, yeah, of course.
And we're having this problem right now, especially with AI, because you get all these keynote announcements and then you're trying to figure out like, okay, what's going to be delivered right now? What's available now? What's available this quarter? What's available this year? And it's back to this whole nightmare of trying to figure out like what can customers actually use. And so I have a lot of sympathy for analyst firms there. And ultimately, I think what's going to work better is something more interactive than just like dots on a product placement map that really allows engagement. And who knows, maybe eventually AI will help with that a little bit, where you could actually interact with the data and say, well, how would this apply if I'm in the chemicals industry? And then the map could reconfigure and show me what this looks like in the chemicals industry. Or, you know, how does this apply if I also, you know, have data centers in APAC or whatever? And then it reconfigures and shows you, you know, like, to me, that would be really cool. And so I think that's something that maybe over time can be addressed. Because my issue is more, it's not that the firm don't have this information, because if you talk with their people, they'll tell you all of that. But how do they represent that in a way that is useful to customers at a glance? And that's what I think can be tricky, along with like vendor placement and who are your clients and who are not, which is the part of it that is like really yucky sometimes.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I'm just thinking about your idea. About this configurable UI, maybe you could even say, okay, I want to implement that process. Show me which whatever services of which of whatever vendor X and Y would I need to do so, and which kind of different contracts would I need to sign? Whatever, well, that would be add a lot of transparency to the whole industry, I think. I would like that from a vendor perspective, to be honest. But
it might ultimately be challenging for you, but those are good challenges to have, right? Because those challenges are about serving customers better with more transparency. And I think ultimately, even though that can be painful at times, it's ultimately good for everyone. One thing I just quickly wanted to mention, because you mentioned like licensing and contracts briefly, there are some really good analysts out there and analyst firms that specialize in contract negotiations. And that's actually like can be pretty important, especially with working with like really big software firms and really big systems integrators and stuff like that, because they have so much more experience in negotiation than the average customer. And so it's not about being adversarial, but it's about someone that really knows your industry and situation, being able to scrutinize your contracts. And it's becoming important because this whole idea that like cloud software was going to be, you know, incredibly cheaper and more economical and stuff has kind of gone out the window. And so it's really important to be able to like to get that expert advice on, like, before you sign? Because it's just like anything else, Martin, like, the time before you sign the contract is by far when you have the most leverage. And so that's when you really need that help.
Yeah. So there are specialist research companies in the whole licensing topic, or are there, or do the big ones also offer the services?
It's kind of a combination. Different firms have more specialization in that than other firms. I can think of a couple of firms, like things like to the kind of mind, Third Stage Consulting, Upper Edge. Like both those firms spend a lot of their time around negotiations and contracts, and they don't actually do a whole lot of research per se, but I kind of consider them like analyst firms by proxy. I mean, you could argue whether they're not, they don't fit the classic definition, but keep in mind, I tend to cast a pretty wide net and I tend to be inclusive in the use of this term. There are still some people in our industry that are kind of like, well, you're not an analyst firm unless you publish this amount of quantifiable research every year or whatever. And I understand where they're coming from. It's important, like, to recognize that happens. But what I do is I go to events, and anyone that I rub shoulders with in the analyst event, if they're invited, I figure they're an analyst. So, you know.
That would have been my next question. Who decides at the vendors at the end to whom to invite for the analyst event? Because I think to some extent that makes you an analyst if you're there.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's what kind of what happened to me is I started getting invited to more and more analyst events. And what I found was that it was improving my dialogue with the vendor, and I thought it was improving a lot of my content. And we could talk a little bit about the NDA aspects, because some of these events like do have some significant NDAs at times, but a lot of times those do lift over time. And even if you get some NDA content, it still gives you context that helps you to better like serve customers when they have questions and stuff. And so, yeah, more and more you get invited and you go to these events and, you know, you rub shoulders with people from all the walks of life we described, really, and they're all there. Some of them are very narrowly specialized. Some of them are broader. Some of them are independent. Some of them are with big shops. And, you know, it's quite interesting. And some of the most fascinating things are watching the back channel debate that can go on with vendors and analysts from all different backgrounds kind of going at it. And vendors don't tend to like it when it goes off the rails, but the conversations that go off the rails are often like the most amazing conversations, like where one analyst will flag like, hey, this market messaging you're talking about with your AI pricing really doesn't work, and here's why, and then boom, and then suddenly there's this big debate and then all this back and forth. Vendors don't like that too much a lot of times, but I understand a little bit of why they don't like it, because at some point you have a very packed agenda and freeform discussions can get really out of control. But that collective intelligence of people sparring from different positions and perspectives is like invaluable. And I find myself wishing that more people could experience that beyond just the people in the room, because I think vendors that cultivate those kinds of discussions, like, really, like, everyone can learn from it. And so one thing I try to do is share as much from those discussions as I can, like, later, but it's not always easy to do it because sometimes it's confidential. But anyway, those, so you never know who you're going to see, but it's always fascinating. And it's really up to the vendor. You know, the vendor, some vendors are very imaginative with who they invite, and some of them are very formal, and just depends.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you very much for all the insight. And by the way, I had the pleasure to attend one of these analysts Q&A. I think it was the TechEd for the SAP Mentors, and that was very, very interesting. I really enjoyed what I saw there and how this discussion went in the end. And I think one aspect about the NDA you just mentioned, I think it's also important for the vendors to some extent that they can get early feedback from the analysts already, maybe ahead of time, so that they are maybe even able to change some of the some parts of the product. Don't know if that happens.
To me, that's the real magic that happens. Not necessarily the NDA part. but the trust that can develop where you're talking about stuff that is potentially really sensitive for people in the room, and yet everyone is being trusting and being open, and it's so healthy because, like, the vendors that embrace that, like, really are able to then get incredibly valuable stuff that they can act on for customers. And you can get really good feedback also from customers and from vendors also, if, you know, but the big thing is that analysts, like, have such a wide range of experience, and they're so used to giving you the straight deal because that's what they do. And, you know, I just think it's invaluable for vendors to get that. And, you know, some customers just aren't able to vocalize as much as they want. You wish they could, but a lot of times customers have various reasons for wanting to keep a little bit of that under a little bit of wraps. And so, you know, obviously the customer influence councils that vendors have are incredibly important also, but getting that from analysts and having that discussion and even mixing it up, like one of the best events I ever went to was a mix of VIP customers and analysts all having a group discussion with the vendor. We need to cultivate more of these inclusive discussions, Martin, because that's where we all get smarter and better. And to me, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. What a great summary, I would say.
A good close?
A good close. Well, what do you think? Something to add from your side?
No, I think we're good. I'm interested to hear more at another point, maybe offline, about some of more of your experiences. But I think I've gotten some of a flavor for it. But it sounds like you have a lot going on about your experiences with analysts that have informed this conversation. So I'm looking forward to digging into that more with you, because that's very interesting to me. But
yeah, maybe we don't do that publicly. As I said, I can comment on this. That was for sure one area of my, so.
But I think it informed the whole discussion, though, which was cool. Like, you knew what you were going to ask based on all those experiences. So that was cool.
Yeah, right. And just to give some background information, I moved 2 years ago from consulting to vendor, now with Neptune Software and Product Management, and vendor analyst relation is to some extent part of my job. And that was, to be honest, the only part which I didn't touch at all before. Yeah. I mean, all the whatever requirement stuff for a product or setting up roadmaps, that's not too different from what you do as a consultant if you are assigned to projects and all that kind of stuff. And also whatever, also did also some marketing stuff back in the days in my old company. That was not really new stuff for me, but the whole analyst stuff was kind of okay. I know I kind of opened this door now, and it was kind of okay. Now maybe I understand it better now. But thank you very much for all your insights. And I'm quite sure this was not the last podcast the two of us did together. Thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a pleasure. Thanks, Martin.